This is a HeadGum Original.
This is Punch Up the Jam, the podcast in which we take the greatest hits of all time and we make them even greater.
This is our first time ever here in the HeadGum Video Studio. We've got the logo.
Yeah.
We've got the inspirational albums.
Fake Grammys.
You're seeing our face for the first time ever. I guess you could still be listening to the audio if you're just on a podcast app.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to, you could click over. You could watch us on YouTube. And also, we're here with Julian.
How's it going, everybody? How you doing?
What a delight.
Julian, who didn't even know this is going to be a video.
No.
This is how good he looks. He showed up and he was like, I'm so glad we're just doing a podcast and not a video.
That is a thing that, you know, when you think and there's like words in your head and they stick with you like a conversation?
I called that a podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
my own personal podcast. Today, I said to myself in my brain studio, thank God I don't have to be on camera today. I can wear whatever I want.
Because Andrew had told you very clearly, please come be on our podcast.
Yes.
And that means something specific, and it doesn't mean cameras.
It's confusing.
If you're listening, I do want to say what I'm wearing. Uh-huh. I'm wearing this shirt that has a fox on it. And it says 1922 to 2010.
I noticed that, yeah.
And whenever I wear the shirt, people love to ask me if that's how long the fox lived.
That's obviously
what this shirt is suggesting.
Impression. It's suggesting that this is an 88-year-old fox with a death date.
Yes, it has just died in 2010. No, it is how long a place existed. That a cabin in the woods called Yelping Hill that my grandfather built a house on, and we go to sometimes. And this was for its anniversary.
Good. I thought you were going to say until it was destroyed in 2010.
The place has a death date.
No, this shirt is just like 13 years old at this point.
Wow. I was so sad like three quarters of the way
until
through that.
The
I, was
fires
like, I was like, and, tore then, through and Connecticut. Then they had to sell it. Someone knocked it down and built a McMansion.
The mean old developers from Ernest Goes to Camp came and bulldozed it.
And we all got together and rallied and we had a song and we had a benefit with all the kids in the town. And at the end, they said, this is real life. And they bulldozed anyway.
I'm feeling intimidated right now because, well, I'll tell you, I get psyched and I feel like I'm in my comfort zone when we come here to talk about a one-hit wonder because mm-hmm. people have a lot less baggage with those artists. The listeners have a lot less at stake. When we come here to talk about a song that's by a superstar, like somebody that left their mark on our culture, on history.
Davy Jones.
Like Davy Jones, like Mr. David Jones.
It's the original name.
I get nervous because, you know, the listeners bring in their own thing mm-hmm. to this episode. And, you know, this is one of those episodes. So I'm not going to say that I'm not nervous.
You're nervous.
Yeah. I'm a nervous young American.
Let's punch it.
Sure.
We can talk during the
thing. You can talk. It's not illegal.
Just trying to take it off your cues.
Yeah. Anything's in bounds.
I have so many opinions about it.
But we don't know what to do. I mean, this is our first video episode. What do you do during the theme song?
I don't know. I thought, I've listened to podcasts and I always assumed that the theme song was added in post. So that was interesting that it just happened.
It's live
it's
here
because it's live.
It's a music podcast. It's on the soundboard.
Can I say things about Bowie or would you like me to wait?
We want to say things about Bowie. That's
say
what
things
this
about Bowie.
Start saying things.
Say whatever
you want. I was worried
you
were going to suggest a signature dance for our theme song is what you were about to do.
Oh, no.
But you're
no,
ready
no.
to jump in.
I already said it and I was thinking and I have so many thoughts about David. Namely, you're saying he's not a one-hit wonder. He has such a discography.
Are you going to say he is a one-hit wonder?
No,
that
no,
be
no,
the hottest take.
No.
This
That'd
is
be
the hottest
take.
Take I've ever. I can't believe Julian came in here
I
to say
I can't believe
that
Julian said David
wow.
Bowie's a one-hit wonder.
It's just sound and vision.
Put it in the Rolling
That's the only good
Put it in the Rolling Stone clickbait title. David Bowie?
One-hit wonder?
Julian only likes the David Bowie songs about space?
Wholesome Man Sucks?
Wholesome Man Sucks. No, I think he has so much bad music. There's so many. When I was in college, I wanted to listen to every
this
Bowie
is,
song.
This is a hot take.
This is a good take,
yeah. That's very brave.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no. I think the majority of his music is unlistenable.
Hmm. So that's beyond like he has a couple bad songs. You're into like if you were just like to spin a roulette wheel of David Bowie's music.
Odds are it's a turd. It's a shitty song, yeah.
Huh.
He did make a lot of songs. He put enough stuff out there, you know, every once in a while you get a Starman.
Yeah.
No. He's making music like he's not like the Rolling Stones are making music for 10 years and then they're touring on that for an additional 50.
He's always doing
this. He's like, all right, it's 2007. Here's my new David Bowie album. It's like, I haven't heard of that album. Most people have not, but it exists.
He did the first digital-only release of an album.
Ah,
I believe that to be true.
It's the anti-Prince.
Bowie, what he did, which was so beautiful, was he constantly was trying to make new stuff and stay relevant. And then this is also, I do want to say, only my opinion. It is not law or fact.
What?
I want to say that now.
You dare come on this podcast and share your opinion.
But I only like maybe the first several years of his work.
Yeah, I was listening through some of it earlier today because this is one of his first like
big
top 25 hits. This is one of his, I was shocked to realize that all of his biggest hits were in the 80s.
Yeah.
And all like in the 80s, like at that point, he's approaching 40 in his 40s. And that's when he has hit with
Just
Under
Dance.
Pressure, with Queen. He has Just Dance. Mm-hmm. He has the really bad cover, in my opinion, of Martha and the Vandellas dancing in the street.
Oh.
With Mick Jagger.
That's the best music video ever made.
Which is like...
They're just trying to kiss the whole time, but they can't.
The dancing is really wild. And I just had to scroll through the comments until I saw the comment that I so desperately needed, which is, these are the moves like Jagger? Like, this is what Adam Levine is aspiring to? These dance moves?
It's just swinging and snapping. That's it.
Yeah. I think I've seen a Shreds video of it. I think there's a Shreds video out there of just like them shuffling their feet and snapping. It just sounds incredibly weird. Their dance moves are very strange. They're wearing these very billowy shirts.
I do not like Family Guy. I don't. I watched, listen, I'll connect the dots.
Okay.
But I watched a lot in middle school.
Okay.
And there's a part in it where Peter Griffin goes, just watch this video and plays that whole music video. And it's...
Did they animate it? Or
No. He just says, you gotta watch this video. And then it's just that whole music video.
Not animated.
And when I was a kid, I thought that was the funniest thing literally ever. I would show it to everyone.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not wrong. Just watch this one piece of media.
It's really strange video. But Bowie, like... And then he has these weird breakout hit moments, like his work, you know, I've read a lot of ranking Bowie's albums articles.
Because there's so many. You gotta rank.
Because you want to see where all the songs you hate are.
Exactly.
You're like, you need a turds making
I
want to
see
list.
The, but one of my favorite Bowie songs, Zeros, is on everyone's least favorite album, Glass Spiders.
Hmm. Or do people accept that it is a good song on a bad album?
No.
People are just like, that song sucks.
It's
and
so
you think
good.
They're wrong.
It's so beautiful because it sounds like it's old music. Hmm. And then, wow, I'm just realizing I know a lot about Bowie right now.
That's why we had
you. I didn't know.
And that's why I must interrupt ourselves.
We were so
excited to talk about Bowie because we knew we had you on as Bowie fan and expert that we failed to even properly welcome you into the show. Listeners of Punch Up the Jam, welcome to the show. Julian Shapiro Barnum.
Hey.
The host of Recess Therapy.
What?
Yeah.
We have a welcome song for you.
This is our first, I would say, intentional collaboration, but we've had an unintentional collaboration before with the song It's Corn.
This is like, we've been working together for a little bit now. It's kind of funny that we've never met before.
Yeah, today's the first time we ever met. We've emailed a lot.
Yeah.
We've talked on the phone.
Texted.
Instagram, that weird thing where you do Instagram messaging and
who
texting at the same time.
The
you know?
Gregory Brothers Instagram.
Sadly, it's all of us.
It's all of us.
Because I never know who I'm talking to.
Yeah.
Neither exactly. do we. It's pretty clumsy.
Do you have It's Corn on the soundboard?
No.
Right.
Yeah, I could put it on the soundboard. Give me a minute.
So people know.
Yeah, people might not know about It's Corn as possible.
I doubt it.
But Julian, what do
tell
you
us
say?
About,
you
tell
interview,
us,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Julian
tell us
interviewed
about
a young
Recess
man.
Therapy. For tell us about Recess Therapy, the show, if people don't know about it, because our main goal here is to drive people to go watch your incredibly funny and wholesome and life-changing content.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm Julian Shapiro Barnum. I am the host and creator of the Instagram and TikTok and Facebook, you know, the media, yeah. the digital show Recess Therapy, which is a kids interview show that I started when I was in college. I go out on the town with my crew, Charlotte Weinman and Julia Ty Goldberg, and we, with jovial spirit, approach parents, and I go, hey, folks, we're interviewing kids today for a children's show called Recess Therapy. Could we talk to this kid? Could we talk to that kid? Could we talk to them about X? And yeah, I've been doing it for a year and a half, and it's gone well.
Let me
it's blown up. It's huge.
Let me toot your own horn for you, because what's going on in the show Recess Therapy is that you are a gifted and generous interviewer of children.
Thank you.
You get on their level. You talk to them about what they want to talk about. You understand what they're sharing, and the result is like genuine gems of comedy and yeah. also wisdom from the youths mm-hmm. of today.
I was recently, because of the success of It's Corn, mm-hmm. you interviewed this amazingly optimistic and wholesome child, Tariq, mm-hmm. about his love for corn. Mm-hmm. We've been getting a lot of submissions. A lot of our fan, like a lot of our work is like, we see it through fan submission. You know, people mm-hmm. sent us your corn interview to do. I've been getting a lot of submissions in the last week of interviews with kids. And I watched one a couple days ago where I was just like, well, maybe this worker Julian would be doing the interview.
Because
it was just very suited news interviewer who was just like, every question he was asking was like a leading question for the kid. It's like, well, we're not really going to hear the kid's opinion.
Is it where he says, I'm going to die today?
No.
Anytime anyone else speaks to a child, I get it sent to me.
Yeah.
And there was a very funny, I'll send it to you later. But yeah, I really tried it. Like, you know, I was doing on the street interview stuff for years. Not that many years. I'm not very old. But I was doing a lot of interview stuff, and I was interviewing a lot of adults, and I was having a lot of negative experiences with them, which is people saying things that I thought were kind of messed up and like just like for the camera. Mm-hmm. And then I set out to film a video where I interviewed elderly people about something a little bit provocative, and I got yelled at. And I did a 180, and I went and I started talking to kids.
Started asking kids provocative
questions. Very provocative questions, very messed up questions. But I, you know, I've been working with kids my whole life, and I, in some capacity or another, and it just comes very naturally to me. I really like talking to them.
Yeah. It's a great show.
And I think when they feel comfortable and when they feel like, I don't think they're asked what they think by a stranger a lot of the time.
That's true.
Yeah.
They do get a lot of yes or no questions or telling them, here's what you're supposed to be doing right now. Here, go do this.
And I think kids, when they're like given a mic and a camera and like three young adults who are like, we really want to hear what you have to say, they spill and are very generous. And it's often very sweet and funny. They spill. TMZ would have a field day with them.
They dumped the hot goss on their parents.
Tariq dumped the hot goss. He spilled the tea on corn.
That's good.
I will say, I did pull the song.
We're gonna listen.
Having listened to It's Corn as often as I have now, to editing the video, you know, working on the song, watching the interview a lot. Do you feel like there's a possibility that what Tariq is more interested in corn is really the butter?
He seems like, well, we've talked about this a little, is that he didn't like corn until it had butter. Yeah. No one's talking about that. No one is talking about that.
It feels like there's an opportunity. Like, the corn industry is moving in and working to make Tariq its spokesman. He's done an ad for Chipotle. He went to the Corn Palace in South Dakota.
Good for him.
I worked for Big Butter, if I was a dairy farmer in Minneapolis and I was ahead of Dairy Farmers of America, I'd be trying to swoop in and be like, it's not the corn that tastes good, guys. It's the butter. And also the butter is what makes the salt and pepper adhere to the corn.
I don't know. I'm here for both, man, because the butter and the salt are the taste revealers of the culinary world. Do you like dry toast with nothing on it? No, you don't. But buttery toast, it works. It's such a pure food. Butter is like that pure fat that you can put on any food and render it delicious.
I will say, just because I think it's important, Tariq likes other foods. He's really into broccoli.
Great.
He really likes dumplings.
Okay.
He likes fruit. I just like, that's not out there. That's not information that's been in an interview. That's just of our private conversations between before and after the interview.
That's important because he's a well-rounded guy with real taste. He's not just a meme.
He's not a guy. It looked like you guys were at a food festival when you did the interview.
And he had eaten just before. Okay. The second time, so he came back and I was like, Tariq, buddy, whatever you want, I'll buy it for you. And he was like, I just had lunch. And I was like, do you even want corn? And he's like, not so much.
Yeah,
and then we brought it out and he couldn't help himself. But, you know, he set himself up for that.
The man's at a food festival. He's there for the dumpling. He's there for the broccoli. Okay. Right, so what made you, of all songs in the world? No, I mean, this, and we'll talk about this a little bit later. This wasn't the first song you picked because we straight up vetoed maybe as many as 5 songs that you sent.
Well, you said,
I said, any
instructions
song,
were
any
very
song.
Clear.
I said, any song, and you sent me 5 songs. And then I said,
no.
I talked to Evan and we said, we need songs that are more famous than this.
I was like, let me be interesting. I was like, let me pick songs that I love that maybe people don't know. So I was
sure. You're trying to impress a first date with your playlist is what
I was trying to make a mixtape for us.
Evan and I said, we're working in the attention economy.
Yeah. You need.
We're making our living with clicks. We got to get some clicks.
Yeah. You don't need to flirt with us with your indie rock.
Yeah.
No.
We need you to go broad, big.
I went to Bowie and I went to specifically Young American because I love that song. Okay. I have listened to it so many times and durational listening leads to opinions. And if this is a podcast about opinions on music, I have
it
opinions.
Let's say that. Let's clip that out. That could be a motto of the show.
Yeah.
Durational listening leads to opinions. Put that on my epitaph.
Merch.
I really want to get into the lyrics. Like all we really need to talk about is how many nuts lyrics are in this song. But Andrew, could you just give us like a little bit of context for what is going on in Bowie's career when he comes to record this thing?
I mean, when people think Bowie, they think about a man who lived in phases.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right,
the many phases of Bowie.
Many phases of Bowie, right? Yeah, and
just to name a few.
Please.
The Ziggy Stardust,
working class, young Bowie.
Yeah. Then Ziggy. Then what is his
pre-Bowie David Jones?
Then he goes to the Thin White Duke.
The Thin White Duke.
Is that after that? Is that
the Thin? This is in a brief period.
Yeah.
Between Ziggy Stardust, where like he has the lightning painted on his face, and he is wearing the costumes, and his backing band is called like the Spiders from Mars.
Yes.
And then the next album, he starts going into the Thin White Duke.
But then he starts doing these like big, big pants and the little button up and the little tie outfits.
Yeah, but this is like this album, which is also called Young Americans, is like this one album between the Thin White Duke and Ziggy Stardust, where he calls it his plastic soul. Face.
Ah, plastic soul.
Did you know this? Or did you look
plastic
this up?
Soul face. I looked it up.
Okay,
I looked
it up. Now you know it.
He calls this plastic soul face, and there's a great quote. He said, "Plastic soul is the squashed remains of ethnic music as it survives in the age of Muzak, written and sung by a white limey." So he's like, he's trying to embrace rock. He's he like in his whole career. Is always very honest about rock and roll being like having its roots in Black America.
Yeah,
There's that amazing interview he does in the '80s. Have you guys seen this interview?
No.
He did an interview in the early '80s with MTV. Where like in this interview that's supposed to be a softball interview, he basically starts asking the interviewer like, "So why are you guys not putting any Black people's music on MTV?"
What?
It's an awesome interview. And the guy's like, we are sometimes. And Bowie's like, well, I watch MTV a lot. And usually you're putting on like the Black musicians around like 2-3 in the morning. And the guy's like, the guy's like trying to make it better. But he says something insane, which is like, well, we have to interest all of America, not just the people who live in cities, but also the people who live in Poughkeepsie and Peoria.
He had to do he was on the spot and he had to do the soft racism of like an executive appealing
but
to
Dave
mass
Bowie
audiences.
Is not letting
well Bowie's
the guy have
good for him, what a legend.
Not to go like too down this rabbit hole, but like Bowie's politics in his music are so interesting because he feels like he can get away with a little bit more than I think he should feel. He says a lot of kind of whack stuff. He says some whack stuff in this song.
Yes.
We'll get to it. But like China Girl, also not a song. That's a Iggy Pop song that he covers.
But
he also did a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
He's a controversial character. He slept with a 16-year-old, and then the 16-year-old was like, no, it was awesome. And he got off the hook. She was like, this was really cool, and I wanted it really bad.
Did you say that on the stand?
Yes. Well, no, she testified. I don't think it got to court or anything, but like, he always does stuff, and he always comes out on top. Yeah. And he lived atop an REI.
Yeah, so like his whole thing.
Don't take that as an endorsement.
No.
So his whole thing about like about like ethnic music and the age of Muzak, but sung by a white limey, it's like, it's this very like cerebral take on it, but it's like, is it really that different than like the Rolling Stones
doing
the blues, or like Lennon? John Lennon actually was on this album. He co-wrote the big hit on it, Fame.
He played Fame with him?
Yeah, and then they covered Across the Universe on this album. John Lennon played guitar on it because they were just acquaintances, basically, that became friends working on this album. And John Lennon had a much simpler way of talking about it, which is he said that this album was great, but just rock and roll with lipstick. It's like,
that's very Lennon.
Huh, it is very John Lennon.
He got right to the heart of it.
Yeah, way more to the heart of it than just sort of being like ethnic music, but in the age of music, but sung by a white limey.
David Bowie comes off sounding like an anthropologist.
Yeah, but
he's not wrong though.
But David Bowie really wanted to, like, as he, you know, in his mind, he's like, I'm gonna go to America and I'm gonna make a rock and roll album in the tradition of like the rock and roll pioneers who were black. He goes to Gamble and Huff studio in Philadelphia, which, I don't know, honestly, to me, kind of an odd choice, because like, why not go to Detroit? Why not go to Memphis? Why not go to Stax Studio or Motown? But he goes to Gamble and Huff.
It's closer.
That I think of as like a very far third place studio. It's like, do you want to be at the studio where they did like Aretha Franklin, or the studio where they did Teddy Pendergrass? And Teddy Pendergrass hasn't even happened yet.
Wow.
Anyway, he goes to Philadelphia and he
dragging
does have...
Dragging Pendergrass on my show.
So wrong.
But he... I love Teddy Pendergrass. Teddy Pendergrass is awesome.
Sure.
But he's
just backtracking it, just walking it back as fast as you can.
So are you telling me you like Teddy Pendergrass more than you like Aretha Franklin?
Yes. Teddy Pendergrass.
But he did have an amazing band for this. He had Sly and the Family Stone's drummer on it. He is kind of funky because he went because he wanted the Philadelphia
it's
house
a good
band,
drummer.
But then they weren't available, so he hired all these other guys. He had the Isley Brothers bass player on it.
Wow,
smart. That's just smart.
Which is great. I don't know. That's the background. Is that the background you're looking for, Evan?
Absolutely. I think we need to let David Bowie's politics speak for themselves by playing the song. I have the single version. Otherwise, we'd be here all day talking about eight verses. But I want to get into playing the song, which just immediately puts you in a spot. It sounds funky.
The opening.
Like a little glissando coming down.
Oh, it's so good.
Amazing backing band. Like, they're just the skills are on display here. It sounds tight. The saxophone is being played by David Sanborn, legendary alto sax player from American music scene. This is like early in his career before he hit it big. Okay, so now we're getting into lyrics.
Oh, I have so much to say about this first verse.
I'm just gonna just pause. We gotta bite this off. Like, I think
it's a story.
I've heard this song a lot, and you just accept it as a happy song celebrating young Americans being carefree. It would fit in with a lot of pop music, but it ain't that.
This first verse is about a bad hookup that happens way too fast, that begets a child. And it took me looking up
is it a bad hookup or is it a bad marriage proposal?
Oh, is that what you think?
They pulled in just behind the bridge. He lays her down. He frowns. He's hesitating here.
Yeah.
Gee, my life's a funny thing. Am I still too young? What does that mean? Am I still too young?
To have a child.
He needs to get married.
Look, he kissed her then and there. I get, she took his ring.
Mm-hmm. She took his ring. So she accepted the proposal. Here's that line. Kissed her then and there. Took his babies. Now, as far as I can tell, that's just sperm. Like, they had sex. He proposed, she accepted, and they decided to consummate the proposal right there behind the bridge.
And it took him minutes.
Yep.
Took her nowhere. Yep. Yeah, that's what I'm talking
huge
about.
Huge burn.
Everyone can identify with, you know, the man one is getting his rocks off where she is like, wait, what about me over here? Just waving her hand. Mm-hmm. Hello? Mm-hmm. Hello? What about me?
Do you have, is this a, something you feel?
Yeah, this is a personal story.
Hello? I just think it's a funny way to lead in.
I like this song. This is a good song. But I think it's absolutely unhinged that David Bowie, like, does this sound like an American rock song? Sort of.
Sort of.
Sort of.
Yeah.
But the lyric writing, to me, is so detached from any sort of traditional American rock and roll lyric writing. Like, there's no rhymes in here.
Yes, this is a hot take. This is a hot take.
Like, fire.
That is absolutely wild to me that David Bowie was like, I'm going to go to America and I'm going to make an album that is, his words, not mine, an ethnic album. It's like, what historical rock and roll song sounds like this lyrically? And my opinion is none of them.
No.
And I don't know, maybe if I spoke to David Bowie in depth, which I'll never do, he would say, well, of course I was going for the sound, but I needed my hot David Bowie takes.
He wanted to write his poetry. This sounds like New Age poetry. Yeah. There are no rhymes in this verse. You just accept it.
And it's about like working class America in this, in my opinion, like really white way. That when I read the lyrics of this, and I was like, this is one of those America songs that people are like, yeah, America, because they hear America in the song, and then you read the lyrics and you're like, this is about how depressing America is.
Like Jack and Diane or something?
Like Jack and Diane, yes. Or like, it's like a John Cougar Mellencamp, like Jack and Diane,
yeah.
Or like Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen.
Sure.
It's very like, reality is hard.
Yeah, but then I was reading more about the album, and he literally recorded a Springsteen song on this album, and they cut it.
Really?
And it's bizarre to me that David Bowie's like, I must go to America and make a, his words, not mine, ethnic album. And then he was like, I'll record a song by this American rock and roller, Bruce Springsteen.
Who just did Born in the USA. So are you saying Young Americans is a watered down Born in the USA? It even has Americans in the USA in the title. So this is extremely hot taking.
So
the song he covered was It's Hard to Be a Saint in the City, off Greetings from Asbury Park. Like, do you cut that Bruce Springsteen song because you realize, like, well, this one's kind of my Bruce.
Yeah, you don't want to give it away.
You don't have the inspiration, the song that inspired Young Americans right by it. But it's like,
don't show
it's just
hand.
Really strange to me that, if anything, this reminds me of a Springsteen song. Even the saxophone. It's like a Clarence Clemens thing.
You're right.
Except David Sanborn's a lot better at playing the saxophone.
You're right. I was going to say, like, if you'd never heard this song before and the track started, the rhythm section is in, the sax is blowing on the intro, that what I expect would be like, sugar pie, honey bunch, with a lot of like really square rhymes, just giving you a Motown love song.
Yeah.
But you're right that the saxophone is actually...
It's very E Street Band Clarence Clemens.
Yes.
Yeah. So, that is very funny to me that he's like insistent that this is all like a homage to the history of black music in America. He's very outspoken about that into the 80s and 90s.
But it seems like...
Yeah, it just seems like a Bruce Springsteen song to me.
White America. until he says the buzzwords at the end, but we'll get to those.
Yeah. Okay, we're into the first chorus here. Heaven knows she'd have taken anything, but...
She wants a young American.
Young American. Is he not the guy?
Yeah, the dude in the story?
I feel like...
Is the young American a man who can last a long time in bed?
I think it's like she's tricking herself into thinking that he is the young American she wants, right? Like, he is a young American,
mm-hmm.
but he isn't at the same time. But she's like, he's a young American, right?
Yeah.
This will work, right? That's the way I read the song.
Just clearing one thing up. Is she American?
I don't know.
She is, right? Isn't this a story about like two young Americans getting together, just living the typical American life?
Blew open the case.
I hear this as like Bowie saying, like, this is what young Americans, this is a typical American story.
Yeah.
They got pregnant young. Brenda and Eddie were the popular steady and the kings and the queens of the prom.
I love that. Do you know de Tocqueville?
Yes.
Alexis?
Yes. Not personally.
T.O., really?
We've never met.
He's a bad guy, but this feels like a de Tocquevillian read of America
for our...
I've been to America,
and this is what I've seen.
Meaning we're talking about the French surveyor of colonial American culture. That's what you're talking about.
Bowie is the modern.
Bowie is a modern colonial coming over here. Anthropologically, he's writing the Audubon Society book on Americans.
And this is what he sees. That's what de Tocqueville did. He just, it was first impressions only, written down as fact.
And it's like David Bowie is traveling America, like basically seeing like hotels and restaurants as he's already famous. He's on tour.
And he's peeping.
Yeah.
And young couples.
Yeah. And he like, but how does David Bowie know what normal America is? He's you know, going to Gamble and Huff studio. He's hanging out with John Lennon at the, at a Electric Lady studio in New York City.
Have you seen?
What's he know about young Americans?
Yeah, that's why he had to start watching all that MTV to learn
about
it.
Like, about America. He's like, I met this great young American. His name is John Lennon. This guy knows everything about New York.
He must be from the South. Have you seen that, an example of Bowie being so not a normal person, who cannot live a normal person's life? Have you seen him and Peter Frampton in Madrid?
No.
No!
Oh my God. Homework. Bowie and Frampton went to Madrid, I think for an MTV piece.
Okay.
It's just them trying to get a beer. And they're like in Seoul and like just walking around, and Bowie's like making jokes, and they just get swarmed by
fans.
Spaniards.
Yeah.
And no one goes up to Peter Frampton. Like he like gets pushed to the side. But yeah, I don't think he knows. I don't think he knows what it means to be a young American by any means.
Yeah, he's making it up.
Okay, now, I need a lot of help deciphering the second verse. Sorry,
amazing background vocal, I will say, Evan.
Yeah.
And the amazing background vocal leads us to your least favorite segment on the show.
Oh, no. Then you get
$5. This is Evan's least favorite segment on the show, Julian, and it is, if he can answer this trivia question about the song Young Americans, or it could be about David Bowie's life. I try to keep them gettable. I try to keep them in the pocket. I will Venmo Evan $5.
Wow.
However, in this case, your guest, you're
I steal?
You can steal. Maybe we could have a lifeline. An opportunity to steal.
He's not a lifeline. He's competitor.
He's your competitor. And
I lose these every
the
time.
The question
Jimmy.
Is
in a really bad mood.
You know, we've talked about this is recorded in Philadelphia. There's a as of this is an additional clue. In when was this recorded? I think 74. In 74, he's an unknown who sings and arranged the background vocals.
A man.
A man who became a superstar. Who is that man? And I will say it's not Teddy Pendergrass. Not Teddy Pendergrass.
That was my guess.
Yeah. You play it back. See if you can. Yeah, let's hear his voice. Let's hear his voice.
It's like David Burns, like
rolling it back for night. That all night. Well, I mean, it's not just one guy.
Yeah,
you clued me in. It's a man. You can hear that it's not just a man's voice here. Okay, I'm getting into the second verse here. Okay, let me. Okay,
We can let it ride.
I have an educated guess because of the generous clues that you've given me.
Really?
And the sound of the vocal. And my guess is Luther Vandross.
You got it!
Wow.
That's $5. Yes! That's $5.
Yes! I'm going to be riding that high all day. And it's going to counteract the skull injury I just gave myself by leaning back into that bookshelf.
Okay. For the first time, it's a visual medium. Oh. And you'll know I'm not kidding around when I say that I will Venmo Evan. $5.
Oh, feels good.
You're the man now, dog.
I don't know who that man is. Who?
Luther Vandross.
Luther Vandross.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
Ooh, well, if you want to cry, if you're looking for a song
that
will make
homework.
You cry tonight, we'll get to that later in the David Bowie song. Listen to Dance With My Father by Luther Vandross.
I will. Oof. I will. Ooh. I'm having a small get-together tonight,
ooh,
and I will put it on.
Hall of Fame R&B
dance
singer.
Dance With My Father.
We don't need to get... This is not Luther Vandross's episode. We'll put a pin in that for a Luther Vandross song.
I might have to change my walk-in song.
A later date. Yeah.
Okay, you got,
and we don't need to make Julian out to be a noob. We'll just edit this right out.
No, I know things that you don't know.
Yeah. You ain't a pimp. You ain't a hustler.
You ain't a pimp. You ain't a... A pimp's got a caddy and a lady got a Chrysler.
Wow.
So we'll get to that.
Yep.
That is so crazy. So we're at all the way from Washington.
Yeah, all the way from Washington. Here we go.
From
breadwinner begs off the best.
What?
He finally rhymed. He managed to get bathroom floor and 50 more. That's maybe like the first.
It's just an accident. It's not. He needed a rhyme scheme.
He's trying to write his avant-garde poetry. Yeah. He accidentally rhymed.
Yeah, songs are built on rhymes.
All rhyming.
I wish we'd thought of that.
We did sneak in a few.
No, but honestly, as we were scrambling to get this done, we were like, "This is an easy one because
it's yeah,
you don't have to rhyme.
Yeah, you just fill the whole thing with garbage.
Just say whatever you want."
So all the way from Washington, that is a place in America.
Okay. Yes,
great. Yeah.
Unclear whether it's the state or the district.
He did. I think this man, Quick Nick, we can call him.
Okay.
That's quick because of his sexual speed.
Yeah.
Talking about.
Yes.
Okay. No shame.
Quick Nick.
Sure.
And I think he cheated or something. Begs off. No. He's begging for forgiveness.
I see. Okay. He's on his knees in the bathroom.
Yeah. Please. I came all the way from Washington.
I came all the way from Washington. I have no idea what the Washington has to do with anything.
I think Washington, I assume we're city, D.C., not state.
I mean, I'm willing to go there with you. It's not, don't have any convincing evidence. He could be coming from Seattle.
I heard bathroom, I mean, your read.
Or is he working, cleaning bathrooms?
I assumed being on the bathroom floor had to do with barfing. Just because David Bowie was hugely addicted to cocaine for most of the 1970s, including these recording sessions.
Mm.
So I just assumed he was drawing from his
personal experience
of overdosing and being addicted
to cocaine. Primary relationship with the bathroom floor
is
coke
barfing. Passing out there.
Which is very young American experience.
Yeah, but maybe you're right and he's just a janitor.
Could I don't know.
Just be a janitor, which would be another reason that I don't know who Quick Nick's companion is.
Janitor is a very like Springsteenian occupation.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You know, Quick Nick could definitely be a school custodian.
What's his wife's name?
Yeah, but
Vivian.
Viv.
Yeah, but something that Viv could perhaps be disappointed in her husband for becoming, you know? At 18, when they were in the car,
she thought
he'd promised
more.
That he was going to go to college, and now he's on the bathroom floor.
The bathroom floor also, like, you know, makes me think of like working on the factory floor, but he works on the bathroom floor.
Well, it could be a factory where they build bathrooms. Yeah, for sure. Like 70s prefab appliances.
The bathroom floor.
Prefab bathrooms.
Yeah.
And then I'm just taking the lead on this one, but you know, you jump in any time, but they've been together for 20 years and he is afraid to live any longer.
I have a different take, which is that they're only 20 years old.
Oh, and
they only see the value. They only see the value in being young. Like everything is about being young. Your whole
marriage
life
is already going downhill at age 20.
Right.
They're like, oh God, we've been married for 2 years.
Do we have to phone this in for another 50 years? We're going to die to each other. You know, like the whole point of life is to be young and do fun things. But now that's all in the past. We got 50 years of shit.
This was his first like breakout hit in America. People were like, he wrote a song about America.
And that's what's so twisted and funny about it is that it sounds so sunny.
Just like Jack and Diane.
The beat rocks. The rhythm section is fly. So, and the backup singers are doing a ton of work here. Every time it hits the chorus, everybody in the bar is putting their hands up all night.
I think you could listen to this song and only hear the word American and America and which is pretty much the chorus and kind of like just
I'm
vibe
a young
for the
American.
Rest. Yeah.
Yeah. You just vibe on being a young American. You don't listen to the verses at all. In fact, I need to get back in my spot here. I need to get back up. I'm getting mad just thinking about the verses.
Yeah.
But this one. Woo! Those unisons.
Oh, yeah.
Young America just gets the energy going. It's tight.
We're
about to get to a bridge here. Turn it over to Sanborn for about 4 bars here. Just let this man blow. Listen to this. Unreal.
I love this line.
consider a punch-up that's all sax solo.
You're President Nixon.
Sorry, I had to pause for Nixon.
That's like, he's talking to the American people.
Yeah. He
you're absolutely right. He started finger-wagging there. He's looking directly at every American.
He zoomed out from being like, us. The rest of the song, he's like, us Americans. And all of a sudden, he's like, Richard Nixon.
He couldn't help it. He couldn't help it. He wanted to go Springsteen and just talk about Little Billy and Sally Mae and how they got preggy too early and, oh, what a hardship for the working class. And all of a sudden, he was like, you know what? You're President Nixon. Yeah.
Well, you can wag your finger all you want at us, David Bowie.
It takes a dark turn.
In a couple years, you're going to... look in the mirror. You're going to have Margaret Thatcher. How are you going to feel about that, David?
Wow.
I think if you ever adopt a persona called the Thin White Duke, maybe you're kind of like setting yourself up for some major no-nos.
Seems like,
you know, like
a little eugenicist.
Yeah, sounds like you're maybe eugenicist, and maybe the next thing you know, you're telling the press in an interview that Britain would benefit from a fascist leader.
don't want to
say that. That opinion's wrong.
I think the Thin White Duke would be a good nickname for Margaret Thatcher.
It sounds like Margaret Thatcher's like secret assassin or something. Like Margaret Thatcher, like sending the Thin White Duke. She's like, send the Thin White Duke to East Berlin.
It sounds like a James Bond movie.
Yeah.
Yes. It sounds like the bad guy in a James Bond movie.
Thin White Duke.
And he should have, like, he should have played the character too.
Yeah.
Just put him in the same getup as Labyrinth. See how that works in a.
Wasn't the Duke like one of John Wayne's nicknames? John Wayne was the Duke, right? I thought Thin White Duke was maybe drawn from that culture because David Bowie took his own pseudonym from Jim Bowie, the famous Alamo hero and famous person stabber.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah, just famous for stabbing. So you know David Bowie loves cowboy stuff. Yeah.
And Ziggy Stardust was taken from an American guy. There's like an outsider musician guy who had Stardust in his name, and he cribbed that from him.
Mm. So he does love young Americans.
He loves
like Jim Bowie, the famous stabber.
But the Thin White Duke ended up like, basically it was while he was the Thin White Duke in the late 70s that he kind of started getting fascist, like literally. And then he told people that Britain should have a fascist leader.
Oh, he did?
That was real. But he basically blamed it in the end on two things. First of all, he was like, well, I'm addicted to cocaine.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
And he also blamed it on the city of Los Angeles.
Wow.
I think basically for providing him with the cocaine.
Yeah. Then what is he?
Listen, there's
blaming
no one
us for Nixon. Nixon was
exactly.
We tried our best.
Yeah. So he left Los Angeles.
I tried my best.
He moved back to Europe, and he said something. This is an amazing thing to say when you're leaving the mindset of being a fascist. He said that Los Angeles should be. He said, the fucking place should be wiped off the face of the earth.
Wow!
Wow, that's cold.
That's like
it's very
I don't know if you've left the fascist mindset yet. If you're saying Los Angeles should be wiped out,
he's at least lobbying to become an honorary New Yorker with that kind of attitude.
Bowie was the first person to say, fun hell. What is that horrible quote about New York and LA?
New York is fun hell, and Los Angeles should be fucking wiped off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And Los Angeles is hella fun.
No, it's like, I think, fun hell and like burning heaven or something. Shitty heaven, right? Thank you.
Oh,
I needed that. I was desperately needing help.
That's a good, that's
shitty
a good
shitty heaven and fun hell.
Well, you know, I'm rising above this beef.
There's so much hate in this world. We have to rise above.
I did want to say that, like, who among us has not done cocaine and then felt a little fascist?
It's one of the side effects.
Especially you feel with a little bit stuff, like you really want a
that's
strong
why you have
authority.
To get it tested.
Guys, don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs.
Don't
do
get
drugs.
Addicted to cocaine. Yeah. Or the next thing you know, you're going to be telling me like Swedish Mussolini press that you think Britain should have a fascist dictator.
Oh, man. We really went off the grid on this bridge here. Okay. Yeah. Americans don't like being finger wagged at.
And
even
it keeps
if,
it going.
Even if Nixon sucks.
Do you remember
the bills you had? Ugh, bills I hate this. If this is like him shaming us for getting avocado toast, back off, Bowie.
It's also...
Wait.
Modulation happened. Okay, I'm pausing for the mod.
It's also very like, what do normal people
are stressed
do?
About?
They're stressed about President Nixon and bills. People have to pay bills. Chills.
That must be hard for them. Write that down.
I think the original was, do you remember to yell at your butler?
That was the first draft.
Do you remember
to
park your Chevrolet? Yeah. For only yesterday.
Do you remember you got stuck in the gondola on the Thames? No.
America. No one will get that.
America. Back to the custodian. What's he doing?
He's your limey, channeling ethnic music in the age of music.
Come on, David. Pull it together.
David. His words, not mine.
Never yours.
Let me spin it back just so you can hear this key change. It's so satisfying. You come right out of this bridge onto the last verse in a new, in a fresh key.
You took out of the Tom Phil. His vocal is amazing. He sounds great.
He sounds great. He's belting it out, and it's he's just got so much energy in breaking his voice. You ain't a pimp. But what are these lyrics? What the hell is he talking about?
Can we read them?
We just heard this first couplet here. You ain't a pimp and you ain't a hustler. This is coming out of David Bowie's mouth. A pimp's got a caddy.
What
and
do
a lady
Americans
got a Chrysler.
Do? What do Americans do?
What is he talking about? Is he trying to be ironic about our depiction about blaxploitation? What is he attempting here?
Oh my God. It's so intense.
It's so intense. It still feels finger waggy here because he's saying you ain't this and you ain't that.
There's also this lyric about blacks got respect and whites got his soul train. But that's
it's talking about white Americans co-opting black culture.
I think so, but he also
is doing that.
Had just been on Soul Train, right?
Yeah, but he was very proud that he was one of the first white people, maybe the first white person to appear on Soul Train. But
unabashed feather.
But like
in the cap.
As a nerd, this isn't even that nerdy of a thing. I stick on the metaphor, I stick on the line, mm-hmm. because famously, Soul Train was one of the major pieces of media that was founded and owned by a black person.
Yeah.
Like a guy went out on a limb and like invested to make Soul Train, and it was this huge, enormous hit. There was some like second-rate streaming show about this recently on Hulu or something.
Hulu is first-rate, Andrew, so help me.
All I'm saying is that kudos to that man. Kudos to that man who was a black man who invented and created Soul Train and was told he would fail and instead was a huge success.
So that leaves us with being confused about this line where it seems like it's a reference to himself being the white guy that got on Soul Train.
Yeah, I guess. I think Julian's right that it's about white people co-opting.
You're not this. You're not this. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It's also interesting that a lot of this song feels like it's speaking to white people.
What is, the last line in this stanza, mama's got cramps and look at your hands ache. Let me play it real quick. What is that? Mama's got cramps and are we talking about menstrual cramps? Are we back on the original pregnancy?
I think it's just like back cramps.
Why?
Why?
Yeah,
she's threw working out her back. So hard. She's working so hard.
Yeah, I think it's like
she's on the factory floor manufacturing bathrooms.
I think at this point, some of the overnight recordings, sessions, some of the cocaine is starting to kick in. I think he's just riffing.
I think he's talking.
This could be a riff.
I think he's riffing.
I think he's making. No one can see this, but I think he's making this face the whole time, like really, like, is this right?
I think this is one. Right? He's like, is this American?
Does this work?
Is this American?
Mama's got cramps and look at your hands. You could be right. He's just throwing some wet paper at the wall.
I think this is one of those situations where we're, rightfully trying to put on our spectacles and pour over the lyrics because
it's our job.
It's our job to have opinions.
Yeah.
But you're writing rock and roll lyrics. Maybe you're just singing something that sounds good. And
mama's got cramps. And
you're in the third verse. You're in the third verse, and maybe things are starting to unravel.
We're over here overthinking something that he improvised.
Congratulations.
I think we could just look a lot of these as just like he had a lot of words he wanted to use, and he just found ways to put them in sentences. I think he wanted to say pimp. I think he wanted 100%. To say hustler. He wanted to say cramps.
Soul Train, ache. Chrysler. It's a word salad.
Yeah.
And it's about to get a little worse.
It's about to go into the reference.
Yeah, here's a Beatles reference. Comes up. Let me back it up. Here's a Beatles reference right here.
Which sounds great there.
The backup singers are singing it better than the Beatles ever would.
I want to hear this version of that song.
I heard the news today, oh boy, from Day in the Life. So what is he saying by including this one single reference, just shoehorning in a Beatles thing into this song about America?
Yeah.
That song feels very like normal British life.
And amazing that he, I mean, I think this whole song was recorded before he ended up, like through sheer coincidence, recording two of the songs on this album with John Lennon.
Okay.
That's pretty amazing. That he was just like, gotta put in a Beatles reference.
He quoted Lennon and then met Lennon later and got him on the album. I will say, if I'm trying to draw a connection, Day in the Life is very much about the futility of the life of like a normal working class guy in Britain. It's about the young Briton.
Yeah. So young he's just, Briton. Here he's just bemoaning the life of the working class.
He's trying to write the American version of that song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, after the Beatles reference, we get a little bit more of this word salad. I got a sweet.
You can say no more. I can suck on the jaw.
Yeah, you don't like domestic abuse or finger wagging.
Oh, one damn song that can make me break down and cry. That song you referenced earlier.
Van Ross dance with my father. He's like, okay, can I sock a woman? Can I hold a child?
Luther Vandross walked. He walked away from this recording session thinking, I've got to write a song that will make David Bowie break down and cry.
Luther Vandross walked away from the session and was like, what if I sing a normal song? It could be a hit. A song that wasn't about socking a woman in the jaw or holding a child.
Yeah, just some basic bedroom lover stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's just throwing things out there. I think he's trying to capture the American experience with these lines. I think this whole song makes me really think about like Manhattan.
Because there's so many bridges
and Chicago. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like Chicago, it's just like and Philly. It's like such a city song. It's like in no way about rural America, which I can't speak to personally, but this song feels very like or like San Francisco. Yeah. That's the bridge in my head, the Golden Gate Bridge.
To me, it feels like it's set in a suburb that's immediately outside a major city. This person says like, oh yeah, I'm from Philly, but if you scratch the surface,
it's like Scranton,
a little deeper, they live in like Media.
Yeah.
Wow. And they go into Flower Town. They like to go into Philly on the weekend, but like They live in Media.
What an accusation.
Yeah, and they're like from the suburbs. You know, tough blue-collar guy drinking his brews at Papoose.
I love the cutout moment where there's just like the little breakdown for him to scream and show off his voice a little bit. Ain't that one damn song that can make me break down?
Yeah, you should just concentrate.
Just
that
a little soul ad lib. He's like, this is like I can actually sing. Yeah. This is my homage to like all the soul belters that I'm trying to emulate here. Then you get to the rest of the song. He just ad-libbed it out. Just let the backup singers just show off.
This song sounds great.
I love this song.
One really funny thing about this recording session a thing I learned about the difference in recording is that this recording session really weirded Bowie out because when he recorded in UK, the engineer would add the reverb live.
So you can hear yourself.
So you went back and listened to it, and you listened to your takes, and you were like, okay, this is what it's going to sound like on the record. In the United States at the time, the standard was what it still is, which is like you record yourself clean, and then you add the reverb later, and you can you can change the amount of reverb. Mm-hmm. So it freaked David Bowie out to like listen back to his clean vocals. Like he hadn't heard his clean vocals on an album in 10 or 15
years. Generally, it sounds worse.
Worse. Yeah. That's why he put the reverb
bad.
On. Yeah, it freaked him out. But the song just sounds great.
It does. Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. It
unfortunately, we listened closely to it, and now we feel judged by David Bowie.
Yeah. And I just feel like philosophically, David Bowie is really patting himself on the back for achieving a goal that perhaps he didn't achieve because maybe he wrote a Bruce Springsteen song. Now, every week, we take one of the greatest hits in the history of music and make it even greater. We punch it up. Mm-hmm. But I have a different goal this week, which is I'm hoping that the punch-up will make Julian cry.
Wow.
I hope that we...
Ain't there one gosh darn punch-up that can make me break down and cry.
Yeah, that's my dream.
It's never happened before.
Wow.
I'm excited to hear.
Okay, yeah. So we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to play you a song that hopefully makes you cry.
Makes me break down, yeah.
That'd be
awesome.
That'd be great video. That'd be great for our first video episode.
Yeah, podcast.
The only thing that
can
make me cry is the final episode of a like 6+ year sitcom.
I don't think anybody's cried on this show before. Okay, we're back, and let's talk about what we did. We absolutely 100% punched up this classic song, the song that debuted Bowie in America.
It's much better. I would say we finally achieved, for the first time ever, David Bowie's goal of, his words, not mine, singing, being British people, singing ethnic music in the age of music. His words, not mine.
I'll tell you what I wanted to change about it was how complainy and finger-waggy and judgy David Bowie is about the lifestyle of working-class Americans who think they can achieve the American dream but can't. And basically, to me, this is now a cold take. Perhaps it was fresh in the 70s. Here we are, 40, 50 years later, and everyone knows that capitalism sucks and is not working for people. This is a cold take. Like, we're past that. Bowie's song is barely postmodern to say, like, America ain't so great. Yeah. We're at this point in our culture, we are like triple postmodern.
He was barely post-Nixon. Now we're post-Reagan, we're post-George W. Bush.
So many presidents
to hate
post, on.
We're post Obama's not closing Guantanamo Bay on day one.
And wearing tan suits.
Yeah, we're post Donald Trump, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing to say about Trump. He was a good one.
get him out of here!
Yeah, you're going to have to change that pop spring. The pop screen.
I made Andrew do a spit take
on my pop screen.
Okay, so basically, we rewrote the song with some things that actually need criticizing.
I cannot wait to hear it.
Here it is.
I just know what is going to come, and it's not a song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it feels good. You leave this in. You leave in the sax.
Hopefully it'll make you cry.
They spend the day getting catfished. He swipes around Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's a funny question. My bank account. I got locked out. Can you help? She took his word. Took the bait. He got 10 digits. And the routing. Heaven knows she'd have fallen for anything but call.
Oh my god.
Damn.
She found a young Nigerian.
The freedom of being able to write a song without rhymes shouldn't even be allowed.
Oh, it's so pure.
It's major Robert Frost tennis with a net down energy.
You can really just go down any path.
He said only odds kids will know. She laughed at all his Minecraft jokes. He looked like just 20 years, but he was a midnight.
Oh, God.
Yeah, if he lied about his age, that's a left swipe.
Yeah.
You probably show up on the date, realize he's a young millennial after you're already there. This is terrible.
Are you gonna...
Oh, that's a tasty sax solo. There's only one 90s kid that could be.
Who could be playing the sax?
Do you remember... Oh. Your President Clinton.
Oh,
it was
my
Bill
God,
Clinton.
The whole time.
You just remember, Bubba, you
strolling right onto Arsenio Hall.
Mm-hmm. If you know about Bill Clinton, you're old.
Yes. If you know about the Arsenio Hall show.
You ain't even got a charcuterie pattern. You entrepreneur, lifestyle influencer. Mama's on the gram till she got
Very different Beatles reference.
Yeah. Join my Ponzi scheme. Oh my.
Ain't there one damn TikTok that can make me break down and subscribe?
This is so good.
When you cross over from the TikTok, hitting your For You page to finally hitting the subscribe button.
All right, this is leaving me with a big thought. I hope this isn't offensive, but it's painfully on the nose, and I wonder if all the things in Bowie's song were painfully on the nose. Like when he goes, a pimp's got a Caddy and a lady got a Chrysler with people listening going, it's been said a million times. Everyone's always making that joke.
Because everybody at that time had a Chrysler.
Yeah. Ain't there a child I can hold without judging? Ugh.
It me.
It me.
I'm always judging children. It me, IRL.
I like how the beautiful thing is that the Beatles have become no less relevant. That's beautiful.
Yeah, you can't change the Beatles reference.
You should have.
You must have a Beatles reference.
You should have put like a Charlie Puth line.
We should have put a Charlie Puth.
If you took out the day in the life reference and it was just, it's been a long day.
Because it's a long day when you're grinding nonstop.
Yeah, mama's got cramps and look at his hands ache.
There's one thing we can all agree on, and that's that hustle culture sucks.
Yeah.
That's what we're finger wagging about today. We're not finger wagging about capitalism and the collapse of the American
dream. If you're working as a janitor on the bathroom floor, good on you.
Mm-hmm.
We won't wag our finger at you.
But if you're trying.
We won't wag our finger at you for having to have a side hustle, but we will wag our finger at you for bragging about your side hustle.
Yeah.
On your Instagram.
On Instagram.
Yeah.
This song is punched up, guys.
It's great.
Yeah.
It was fresh. Yeah. I like the like millennial Gen Z conversation going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some generational warfare. And the background vocals still slap, if I do say so myself.
Yeah.
Pop off.
We didn't get Julian to cry, so I think I always regard it as a failure.
I will once I leave.
Okay.
Send us a picture.
Send us a picture. We'll post it on the show's Instagram.
I think what it is that I thought I was Gen Z, and then I knew who Clinton was. And I went,
You're a young millennial. Yeah. Have you ever watched an episode of the Arsenio Hall show?
I've seen YouTube clips. I think I'm Gen Z.
Yeah. I don't know. I think if you watch the Arsenio Hall show, you're probably an old millennial.
I know I am Gen Z, but maybe you're introducing a new
cusp. You're like cusp Gen Z, just like I'm cusp millennial.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I feel like I'm a man without a nation. Honestly.
I was born in the 90s, but don't know the 90s, you know? Sure. But a lot of my friends have in this conversation that early 2000s culture is literally just 90s culture.
Yeah. Evan and I have a long-standing theory that decades start in the fourth year, right?
Yeah.
Like if you see a picture from 1962,
it doesn't
like 100% of people would be like, oh, a picture from the 1950s.
Yeah.
It's only when 64 hits that people start growing their hair
exactly
over their ears, you know?
Rachel didn't do her haircut until November 1993.
Wow.
You know? So 2003, still the 90s culturally. Cool. Culturally.
I was 15 then.
Yeah, the odds hit in 2004. Yeah. Julian, thanks so much for coming on. It's honestly a shame we have
this
to even
so much
finish.
Fun.
But thanks for bringing Young Americans.
Oh,
I loved it as a pick.
Savage pick.
I loved it. I love your hot take that David Bowie sucks.
He sucks. he's an embarrassment.
You know,
said the biggest lover of David Bowie.
I recently on the podcast shared an opinion that I acknowledged was bad. I said, I have a bad opinion that I'm going to share.
It?
I know this is wrong. I wish my opinion was different even. Mm-hmm. And my opinion was that I don't really like Prince.
Yeah.
I was like, doesn't really hit for me.
Oh, pure opinion.
Prince. And people were mad about it, even though like I wasn't saying like I said, that's a bad opinion.
Yeah.
I wish my opinion was different.
And you knew it.
I wouldn't even say I like dislike Prince. I just don't. I don't regard him to be as like a god tier rock.
I like
rock
a couple
person.
Prince songs.
Yeah.
But I'm also, you know, I haven't gone as deep into his music.
I shouldn't talk more about it because it made people so mad. But
why drag yourself?
What I was trying to say, what I was trying to say is every week we finish the podcast with a little segment called Walk-In Music. What is your walk-in in music? And it's a segment where we talk about a scenario that we're walking into, hopefully fictional and hopefully hilarious. Good luck.
Oh, uh-oh. Wow.
And what song we would play. It could be you're walking into a worldwide wrestling match and smashing someone over the head with a folding chair. You could be the closing pitcher for the Mets in Game 6 of the World Series, et cetera.
Yeah.
Okay, my scenario this week is I've accidentally become a fascist because of my raging cocaine addiction, and so I'm moving from my home back to Europe. Ooh, that's relaxing. It doesn't feel very fascist. Mm.
Very smooth. Could be fascist, but very much coming down from a cocaine high. Yeah, I get that. This is more of a sedatives vibe.
You're like on the airplane.
Yeah.
Snorting off the... they're telling you to put up the tray table, and it's just like white.
What is the name of this track, Andrew? What are we listening to?
Let's let the chorus announce it. I hear it. I think we're almost there.
You got four more bars here.
I love it. Funky little
like chorus. My
wardrobe
falling.
Feels looser just listening to this. Breezy.
Flying away, leaving LA. This is Leaving LA by the band Deliverance. Oh, a song really I've always loved and that I discovered earlier today when I Googled songs about leaving LA.
This is one of my favorite songs.
Really?
Well,
yeah. You got me. This is the second hit after a 13-minute song also called Leaving LA by Josh Tillman.
Wow.
Father John Misty, and I said, I'll go with the short one.
Yeah. Well, it's also extremely smooth and felt very 70s. It fit into the ep for me. I want to say it's sort of a walk out song, so I'll do my flip on your idea, which is
becoming
this is my walk in song to being an American, a young American, rolling up into Britain, where you can enjoy the pleasures of being an attractive foreigner.
Okay.
Everyone loves it when a Brit comes here and talks in their funny accent. Here I am. You know this song. You love it when this thing comes on. And this is me stepping foot into the arrivals terminal.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. This is me, the American boy, here to meet and seduce your women with my flat affect and accent from the mid-Atlantic states.
This is like the opposite of the low class guys from Love Actually who go to America to pick up girls because they can talk like this in their British accents, and all the American girls are like, "Oh, you're British."
Yeah, but the principle is the same.
Yeah,
you're exactly right. And this is me being a young American boy and not worried about losing my American dream. I'm achieving it just by going to Britain. That's my scenario.
Love it.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, everybody is 20% sexier in foreign nations.
I think so.
That's
the law, right?
That's
it's a NATO thing,
right?
Yeah. Canceling my flight.
Yeah,
Portugal.
Julian, what's your scenario?
You guys seem like you had yours prepared. My scenario, which I'm coming up with a little bit on the fly, is this song is for my alternate reality of myself where I'm incredibly toxic, and I guilt people into loving me.
Okay.
And so this is, I'm at the Hungry Ghost Cafe in Park Slope.
Okay.
And this person who I've been crushing on hard turned me down. And I just, I come in and I ask the Hungry Ghost Cafe to play this song. And it's subliminal. So it's subliminal messaging.
Coffee That's shop. Very overt. I love it.
Yeah,
it
let's hear it. And I just kind of look at them and do that face that Bowie makes, which is just like, is this right? Because this song is about being alone and sad. And I'm better than that.
Yeah.
Because I'm another person.
Yeah, they're going to be alone and sad with that.
I got to say, it's pretty off-putting.
What
are we listening to?
We're listening to Jonathan Richman's A Plea for Tenderness from his live album with the Modern Lovers. If you care about me,
and if you care about your wow. Well,
very strange
song. This is a good litmus test. If this person is for you, they'll respond to it. This is a great...
If they're as toxic as I...
This is a filter mechanism.
Yeah.
This is a litmus test.
It's not like a vibey song. I don't know if, like... I only listen to this song to laugh.
Yeah, well, you know, every song is vibey, depending on what vibe you're going for. And this is a type of vibration that pushes me away.
It's perfect for your toxic alter ego because
listen to the words.
It's like a neg. It's like a neg in
it's
song.
It's the ultimate
neg in song.
Wow. Well,
yeah. The purpose of the song is to make someone feel bad.
Great pick.
Yeah.
Julian, I have to say, it's been such a pleasure to surf through this Bowie song with you, but I know you as a David Bowie fan, and thank you so much for lending us your knowledge, but we only did the one song. What else could you say about, like, what are your top five David Bowie songs?
Yes, this is very important. My top five David Bowie songs, none of which will be ones that you maybe have heard of.
Okay.
That might be condescending.
That's a brag.
Wow, yeah,
that's
humble major brag. Yeah.
I would say A Conversation Piece.
Haven't heard of it.
Nope. Sorrow.
No haven't idea. Heard of it.
Yeah. Word on a Wing.
Haven't heard of it. Mm.
Zeros.
Mm. Now I'm just questioning that I host a music podcast.
And yeah. Sound and Vision, which you have.
Okay, we know Sound and Vision. Yeah.
Those are my favorite Bowie songs, and none of them are hits.
Wow.
Listen to all of them. They're really good.
Yeah, that was and that was a saucy take.
A fantastic voyage. Mm-hmm. Oh, behave. Well, this was so much fun. Thank you for having
so much,
me.
Dude.
Thank
Where
you.
Can people follow you? This is crucial. I need people to go.
Would you prefer that they follow Recess Therapy,
Therapy
or would they prefer that they follow your Finsta? What's your Finsta?
Oh, follow
say it, my... say it on mic so your parents can follow your Finsta.
My Finsta is at DirtyBoy7. No. Wow. It's, I've had seven accounts.
And read the room, Julian.
Wow, yikes.
My real Instagram is at JulianMSB. My shows page is at recess_therapy. You can also get to my page through that page.
Great. And we'll link to it in the show's
we'll
description.
Link to us. Go follow
we'll
Recess Therapy.
If
very
nothing
strong
else,
recommendation. Improve your life by following
watch,
Recess Therapy.
If you missed it, go watch Julian's interview with Tariq.
It's pretty funny.
It's incredible. It's the many commentators even.
And I'd
neutral
like,
observers are saying it's the most wholesome moment in the history
like it.
Of the internet.
People
please,
like
please,
it.
Please
we
go
all
watch
did a good
it.
Job.
People like
and it. The last thing I'll plug just before we go is the Bowie documentary is coming out, I think, this month.
Oh.
This is the most wholesome plug of somebody else's
great.
Content. That's really beautiful.
I'll watch that.
And
I really
of course, you
Bowie.
Can get all of our punch-ups on our patreon.com/GregoryBrothers. This has been Punch Up the Jam.
Let's punch it.
We punched it.
Woo! We punched it!
Now we're going to get up and dance.
We punched it! You got to admit, we punched it. Now you're obligated. You got to go out there and follow all the things.
Hit up the Patreon. It was in the...
Yeah, you got to sub the Patreon. It's
yeah,
in the song.
It's in the song.
Yeah, it's in the song.
You have to. It's in the song. You got to finally sub the Patreon.
You've been listening to Punch Up the Jam.
That was a HeadGum Original.